Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island-chained paradise and the sunny slave South Pacific Fukushima irradiated coast, where everybody sunbathes by soaking up the rays. And also, it is of note to mention that many people have now started to realise that seasons are changing. You know, summer in New Zealand is just about to start to end and all of these kind of things. Hey, look, life has its bright sides and its dark sides, but as long as you survive, it's all right. And my very special guests today are Verstein Henry and April Bowden. Welcome to the show, girls.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having us on, Vinny.
I know. This is great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you must know the drill by now. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is that you do.
I'll go first. Let me see. We have a talk show called Truth or Talk. You can visit our website at truthortalk.com. April, did you want to...
Well, yeah, Verstein and I are Truth or Talk. Verstein and I have been friends for many, many years. We met in college about 15 years ago or so, and we've known each other for a lot of years. And we had, I would say, within the last 5 years or so, what many people on your show would probably describe as an awakening, or, you know, kind of recognizing the truth of these things that are going on, the things that you talk about on your show. And so we spent about a year or so, or 2 years, talking about it, just the two of us, because I think we had you on our show, Vinny, and you talked about the loneliness of sometimes when you go through these awakening processes, and we actually had each other, which was very cool. And and that was very comforting, I think, to the both of us. And so what we decided to do was take it on air, and that's hence how Truth or Talk was born.
Well, it sounds like a bright idea, isn't it? I think what happens to a lot of people is that they lose all their friends, not just all but one, but all their friends, and they realize that they were hanging out in an entirely slave circle with people who were really, really receptive to the programming, and they do exactly what the program tells them to do, ostracize people like us, because we're dangerous to the system.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. We talk about losing friends in the show a lot, but also gaining friends, because I think since we woke up, so to speak, we've lost friends, but then we've actually had some really really cool friends come into our life too.
You know,
really, really awesome kindred spirits. Sorry, go on.
It's kind of like a social panhandling experience, you know, where you dip your plate into this dirt of society and then you gradually shuffle it away and virtually nothing is left but a few specks of beautiful gold.
Mm. Oh, wow. Really good analogy.
That is a good way to put it. Yeah, and we've had some really, really great friends and some great experiences as part of this. But it was just interesting because we both came to this kind of awakening. And I think for for us, it had a lot to do with the health movement. As I mentioned to you, Vinny, when you were on our show, that I have a vaccine-damaged son. He's autistic. And so discovering the vaccine thing and what was going on with those, because once that happened, you know, I sort of dug myself into this years and years of research of what is this? Why is this going on? Why did this happen to my son? And I wanted to know, because I wanted to help him, and but I was also curious, and I also wanted to understand, you know, if this was happening to him, was this happening to other people? You know, I sort of came to that later. At first, just kind of discovering it for myself, and Verstine as well. You know, had some experience with her asthma, and you know, so we were thinking. Go ahead, Verstine.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say I have an vaccine injured cousin, but I wasn't. I didn't really get it until actually. What I saw what happened to your son, because I still even think at that moment when my cousin was injured, she lived far away. I was still kind of detached, you know, from the situation until I put April in touch with my cousin, and then they started talking, and then April started doing research, and, you know, it all just kind of came together for me, too.
Yeah.
So.
Right, and so the health aspect was a huge part, I think, of our awakening. Because then once you start looking at, you know, what these vaccines are and what they're doing to people's bodies, and then you go, okay, well, not only are they hurting people, but they're actually not even effective. So why are we giving them to people if they're not even helping? And once you research the history of something, for example, like polio, now the official story is that Jonas Salk cured polio with the polio vaccine. But then when you research that, you go, oh, well, that didn't happen at all, because polio was actually being – it wasn't a very – it wasn't a very serious illness until they had started introducing these pesticides. And that was the real history of it, is that it had to do with these pesticides, DDT, and this lead arsenic that was in our environment. And that was what was causing people to have massive paralysis, cases of paralysis. So once you know that, you go, well, there's something, there's got to be something more to it, you know, because obviously there's a cover-up. So what's happening? And then once I discovered that there was a cover-up, I started researching the history of vaccines, and it sort of led me to other areas, other facets of what we would describe as the New World Order, you know, this globalist agenda. And so, exactly. You know? So we started off from a health aspect, you know, trying to fix our own problems, you know, from within, for Christine's health issues and my son's health issues. And so, and that, that led us down this road. And so I first started writing about it. We both write, and I started writing essays, and then, everything just kind of snowballed and evolved into our show, which we have now, Truth or Talk. So,
You know, I wrote an essay once, and he and he sent me a letter back, and he said, "Hey, thanks for writing me, essay."
you're silly, Vinny, but I love it. It's great.
I do too. Yeah, it's really funny.
Hey, and I was going to say as well. I love the what happens is when you get into this movement, there's many, many different ways of getting into the truth, right? For you guys, it was for health. For me, it was for the drug war. For many other people, there's all different sorts of things. And I find it's whatever you've actually suffered from, as in there's so many splinter cell fractals of New World Order scumbaggery going on at all different times that it's affecting everybody in some way, shape, or form. But they don't recognize that it's all coming from the same source kind of thing. And so you develop this bias based on which particular traumas the scumbaggery has caused upon you. And for you guys, it was this BS health system. And then as soon as you start looking into it, then it's kind of like if you've ever seen the Star Wars movies or whatever – or a space battle. You can imagine kind of like a missile that gets fired into a giant space station, and then that space station gets blown up, and all these parts start jutting out in every single direction into space. Okay, that's what I think is really so compelling about talking about things like conspiracies and sensor technologies and all of these various eclectic fields of research that we've now got available to us thanks to the internet and talk shows like yours. This is what's happening, though, is because it splits into so many fractals, so many areas of research. It's sometimes very paralyzing for people to just make a choice and go, yeah, we're going to do this in order to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, you get kind of overwhelmed. It's almost like too much information at once. And, you know, I don't know. It just kind of hit me all at once, you know, and I didn't really necessarily feel overwhelmed by it. I literally, in my brain, and I'll tell you what happened, Vinny, because I was researching the vaccines, as I had mentioned, and it had a lot to do with Bill Gates. I mean, in his own kind of arrogance that he puts out the information, he tells you he's depopulating and he's telling you he's doing these things, I think he gives himself away if you're really paying attention. And so when I saw that, I went, oh, okay, and like a domino effect, I could see in my mind, literally, it looked like a domino or like a helix, like something was sort of, all these connections were sort of branching, things were kind of working together, and I could say, okay, so then you have this global warming thing, I've been kind of questioning that. Oh, you've got this 9/11 thing, I've been kind of questioning that a little bit, but now it all kind of is clear. It's like I can kind of see how all these things are sort of a web, you know, and they all just work together. This is, you know, one thing leads to another and so on and so forth. And so it just sort of clicked, you know what I mean? I just kind of went, oh, that's it. That's what this is. This is all about, there's some kind of eugenics depopulation agenda, because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. You see all the things
they're just,
that are going
on. Just
put
these really stupid people in power, you know?
Right.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, otherwise it just doesn't make any sense. And then there's, you know, there's levels to it, the scumbaggery, as you put it. You know, there's people who are on top. There's this oligarchy system. There's just a few who really kind of know what's going on. And then there's this trickle down of just people that are just scumbags. And then there's douchebags. And then there's incompetence, where it's just like the most of people in government. They're not really, you know, out there to kill, or they really have no higher knowledge of any agenda. But they're just really, really incompetent. They get into this system that's just designed to just do nothing and be useless. And so, you know, you have that whole structure, and but it just all kind of became clear to me at once. I don't know how else to explain it other than that. And it was just it was Bill Gates himself, in his own kind of, you know, just the way, his tenacity and his just arrogance, and how he just is in your face about what he's doing, but then tries to make it out like a good thing. But I could just see right through it, you know.
Well, he's a snake oil salesman, isn't it? I mean,
I mean,
people don't get this. How exactly could you get people to agree to do something that's really, really bad for them and has no justification whatsoever? Mm-hmm. How is it ever going to be good for anybody to get people to agree to that, if not through getting them to agree to it through deception? All right.
Exactly.
I mean, think about it. Just in the New Zealand example, and the examples stretch all the way around the world, land rates, the rates that you pay just to sit on your own land that you own, allegedly, have gone up for everybody, amidst the government amalgamating everybody's local democratic representation, mind you, claiming that it will help them to come down, and only increase them further, even by 10% per year in some cases. You know, this is talking about a massive agenda at play and a huge amount of money. Can you have any idea how frustrating it must be for them to have all this power and all this money, and just a few people who have got very little of either can actually just oppose them quite easily and expose their scumbaggery? I think it's brilliant.
Hmm.
I mean, they're playing against a stacked deck. Isn't that interesting? It takes like 10 or 20 of them or whatever to repress one of us.
Yeah.
If not more. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. That's how much of a pain in the ass we are. People don't realize this, you know. They're like, oh,
right.
you'll never win. You'll never be successful, you know. All you're going to do is get yourself killed and what have you. It's like, dude, do you think that by not resisting, because you're afraid that they'll wind up persecuting you and killing you, will prevent their agenda to persecute and kill you anyway?
Yeah. Right. I was going to say they're killing us anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, anyone who goes along with it, you know, if you know historically, I mean, in the Nazis, I mean, those guys all went down. You know, anybody who was going down, they took everybody out with them. You know, so if you just go along to get along, you're not safe by any means.
Yeah.
If anything,
yeah.
They eat their own more than they do us as the outsiders. You know, as we see, we talk a lot about people who kind of are in the medical industry and they stand out, like a Dr. Andrew Wakefield or somebody like that, who have the gall to say, well, you know, I researched this and I looked at these MMR vaccines and I felt that it was causing some problems and so we need to investigate this some more. Well, I mean, it's the axe for that guy because he's in the medical industry. But I mean, people like us, you know, we can just talk and talk and talk and, you know, we're fine. Yeah. But when you're in it and you're going along to get along, forget about it, you know.
Yeah, because you're blackmailable. And I always thought about the stupidity of getting involved with criminal organizations like this. You know, just get involved with dangerous people, get rewarded handsomely, but at the end of the day, you're dealing with really dangerous people on a day-to-day basis, you know. Oh, right. I'm just going along to get along. Well, you know, I heard this other thing that they were planning to escape into underground bases, you know, like if the world turned to crap or they've deliberately turned it to crap and released bioweapons or something like that. They've got all these big alleged massive underground bases, underground cities all over the place. And they all want to lock themselves down there for like 100 years until things cool down. Then they come back up and start repopulating and everything. Okay. Sounds like a brilliant idea, doesn't it? Except about the part about being locked underground in the dark with the world's worst psychopaths, pedophiles and scum that have ever been known.
That's so funny. You're right.
It's true. It's like, I'll take my chances with the zombie apocalypse any day, you know? Yeah. I'd rather than be locked down with those guys.
At least the zombies won't torture and rape me, you know, in a satanic ritual.
That's right. Well, you got a fighting chance. I mean, those people, and the fact that they, I mean, do they trust one another? I mean, I doubt it. You know, I'm sure that they all probably hate each other because they're just, you know, have just such an evil agenda. I mean, how could you trust somebody if you know what they're planning and that they're doing all these things?
Or what
they're
capable of, you know?
Yeah. Like, do you think the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds really like each other? I doubt it.
So we're their common enemy, but I'm sure if we weren't, you know, they would be fighting amongst each other.
I mean, well, look at the Kennedy family. I mean, they just, you know, they're in it. I mean, they're part of the royalty or they're part of that oligarchy, but then they seem to always be taking them out, you know? Same people that they are, you know, in sort of working with are also the same people that are taking them out. So, I mean, I don't know. You step out of line, watch out.
Watch your back, man. He's going down.
But exactly.
These are the pieces of meat that are held out for the media. And I think what happens is that people don't realize how little they matter to those above them. You know, anybody ever been an employee and had an employer that didn't like you?
Yeah, of course. Sure.
Your life becomes really hard because they can decide your fate. And they don't seem to give a frack about whether or not you've got a family to feed, do they? It's like that, except they're also able to kill you and get away with it.
Okay,
you with hugely damning, credible evidence that they had to have on you in order to invite you into the club in the first place and tell you if you say anything that we'll release all of this and all of this will happen to you.
I think they think of us as like roaches. That's what I see. Or like insects, you know. So it's not even like an employee, but it's just something that they hate. And that's just like in their way or we're disposable.
Well, see, in so doing, I think we've defined the real meaning of power over somebody. You stop caring about people who don't have any power. You know? Think about this. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of there was a jail experiment. They locked up students. I think they made half the students guards or half the students think, I forget the exact numbers or whatever. But what they found is that only after a day or two or 3 days or something, the students who were playing the guards, who had all the power, and the prisoners who had no rights, the interaction between them, the prisoners just started to get treated awfully. Terribly, violently, deceptively, and they were monitoring all of this as it would happen, and they were like, holy cow. Now, I think that's the problem with society in and of itself, the appeal to authority. Nobody should have it.
Definitely.
I don't think such a thing as authority exists to a degree, right? There's no actual real authority in terms of, I can tell you what to do and force you to do it, and have that be totally okay. Maybe in parenting, sure. But adults doing that to other adults forcibly, I don't think is good. For example, I was at this dance party festival over the weekend. As I said, one of my listeners got me a volunteer role on that, and that was pretty hard work, but yeah. This one dude, we were sitting there directing traffic and pedestrians. Pedestrians had to go down one line to go check through security so they can rifle through your bags and pull out all your alcohol and then drink it later, you know. And yeah. Direct the cars into the car park. This one guy wouldn't go through the security check. You know, he's just wearing shorts and carrying an umbrella. He probably didn't have anything on him. And he recognized me as I was telling him to go down the security line. And he starts talking about colour of law and things like this. Now, that aside, you're at a private event, which you bought a ticket for, and he's saying, I don't have to abide by the rules because it's colour of law. Do you think that sounds a little bit stupid? You know, maybe a misuse of the common law practices and the reasons that you're supposed to be, you know, doing things and what have you? I think so, maybe a little. But then again, was I prepared to violently restrain him and force him to go through a security check that he refused to go through? No. Were any of the security guards, other than me, willing to do that? No. Why? Because this person had damaged no property and had hurt nobody. And I think as long as you don't do either of those two things, nobody should ever touch you or force you to do anything.
True. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Vinny, I'm kind of curious because when we had you on your show, you talked about how when you were arrested for possession of weed a couple times. And so once in a while, people will send things and they say, because here in the United States, I don't know what the laws in New Zealand are now. I know you got arrested for it before, but here it's many states, it's still illegal to possess it. And, you know, people want to appeal to the government and ask them for permission. What do you think about that? Like, do you think that we are even needing to ask them permission, or should you just be able to just do it if you want to?
Well, I got charged with possession for supply, which is an indictable charge, which comes with a minimum sentence of like up to 8 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. For 13 grams.
Wow.
That's how serious it is in New Zealand. It's manslaughter. Serious. You know, if you accidentally kill somebody in your car, you can get a similar sentence to if somebody catches you with a couple of grams of weed that is for sale.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
That's heavy. Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
So I was facing that as a 19-year-old kid.
Sure.
All of a sudden.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah. It was tough. It was tough. You know, even thinking about it. You never get over that kind of shock to the system. Just boom. Far out. But that aside, should I have had that happen to me or not happen to me? Let's think about this. How much damage was happening because I was selling weed? How many people got hurt or badly traumatized or had their lives destroyed as a result of the drug? Mm-hmm. Probably none. How many people got traumatized and had their entire life destroyed? It was just me, okay? So was it the drug that did that to me, or was it the law that did that to me?
It was the law. It was the law.
Yeah.
You know, April and I were talking not too long ago about how people are a slave to regulations. You know how there's this case that just happened where there's this boy that was, like, dying, and his parents were forced to come in and make him take a standardized test, even though he was dying. And we were saying, at what point do, you know, the person that had to make that phone call, what point do you, do you say to yourself, I'm not going to call this kid's parents and make him come in and take a standardized test? Because it's a stupid law. Like, you know, morally it's wrong, or it's a stupid rule or regulation, but because it seems like people don't have they've lost their moral compass because they're relying on this, like, regulations or appeal to authority.
There is only one word. I think there's only one word that really gives you power in the face of authority. No.
No. Yeah. And then some people can't take it. You tell them no, and it's like you may as well have shot them, because, you know, there are people that feed off that power too. There are people that feed off of. They love being told what to do because they don't want to take responsibility. And then there are people that like telling people what to do because they have no self-esteem or control issues, or they're a psychopath or what have you.
Yeah, we've all got our little problems, don't we? And unfortunately, the people who really don't want to control other people invariably don't seek positions of overarching power and control. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the problem. Yeah. Those kind of people who don't want to be in power and control, ironically, they're the ones who should be in power and control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like in every story, too. I mean, if you take like anything from Greek mythology or even modern mythology, like Star Wars or The Lord of the Rings, you know, it's always the people who want power, they're kind of, you know, intrinsically kind of evil, you know, that are seeking it. And then those who really should be your leaders, you kind of have to coax them and force them into it. Like, oh, we need you. We need somebody like you who's not going to, you know, be corrupt and not take over and not try and, you know, just use this power to destroy everybody. It's like, it's sort of a well-known thing. It's kind of interesting how, you know, if you know anything about like Joseph Campbell mythology, he says, we kind of are born knowing a lot of this stuff. We sort of recognize it. We see these things around us, and these stories are recycled over and over and over again because they're true. But a conspiracy theorist is sort of somebody who is crazy or has a tinfoil hat or something like that. But it's everywhere and it's in everything. It's if you look at the Bible or if you look at, you know, any of these classic stories, it's like it's been around for how long? You know, these people who.
Forever.
Exactly. They get corrupt with their powers and or seek power because they are corrupt or because they are, you know, they do, you know, want power over others and such like that. So, it's kind of interesting. And then those who don't want power really aren't the ones, you know, you're not going to go out and seek it. Go ahead, Vinny.
G. Edward Griffin started up Freedom Force International because he wanted to train people how to, like, campaign for local government and things of that nature. And it's titles in Latin, I think it's Datis Libertatum Non Possunt or something like that. And it says, those without power cannot defend freedom. And I think what the New World Order is adept at is convincing people that they have no power, convincing us of this this learned helplessness that everybody's talking about.
Learned's a great word, yeah, because we are very powerful, but we, you know, I think especially when you wake up, you get inundated with a lot of information and you get inundated with all of the so-called sinister plans that you feel that it's too big for you, you know, but you forget that they're doing all this because you are very powerful and you're kind of taught to be helpless, you know, you're kind of taught to that too, also through the appeal to authority. Because, you know, we're taught to basically worship or seek somebody else out for the answer instead of looking toward or inward, you know, toward ourselves. And that's a form of, or that's a way of being taught helplessness, I guess, you know, like even with doctors, like April was talking about how we woke up and that was, you know, largely through the health industry. And, you know, doctors are deified and, you know, people aren't really taught to question doctors and people are always taught, you know, whether inadvertently or inadvertently that doctors are, you know, are gods. And if you question them, you know, something's wrong with you or you are a deviant or you're immortal, basically. Yeah. So that's why you end up, you know, with all of these people that are vaccine injured or die, get cancer, but die of the chemotherapy treatment or, you know, and any other disease that can be basically cured, you know, self-cured. But, you know, we're looking for doctors to give us the answers when we have the answers ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anti-science. That's the popular
God
amongst them. They
that's
like to
just
say
anti-science.
That,
yeah.
Right, as if it's, you know, science.
It's like
is
a slur.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
And these people who work in these positions, I mean, they go to school and they do all of that, but that doesn't make them divine. That doesn't give them sort of the understanding.
But a lot of people
of
think
God.
It does, though. That's the thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? They get caught up in that because they sacrifice so much of their their lives, or you know, in school, like a decade or more, maybe school.
The whole system is designed for that appeal to authority endlessly, isn't it? You know, you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my earliest memories was like playing in a sandpit or something like that in kindergarten, and you know, teachers told me to stop doing something or whatever, and it's straight away, you know. You only just come into this world and all of a sudden you've got people telling you what to do. And you grow up not knowing anything different.
Right.
Well, but I mean, if you're a little boy and a teacher, there's a little... Don't you think you need it a little bit? A little bit. You know, you just... The well, teacher shouldn't go crazy with their power.
However, there is, of course, what is known as moral uses of force.
Yeah.
You know, self-defense or things of that nature. I was suspended a total of 17 times from high school, and I think maybe 5 of those times was because I was getting beaten up and defending myself. Mm. You know, I don't think I should have been suspended those times. The other times, absolutely, I was totally unjustified in my behaviour. I was a real troubled kid. But that stopped when my mum hired this guy to come round and hang out with me once a week, named Derek, and we just basically hung out and talked. Just having a male role model around, even for that short period of time every week, made a huge difference, and I stopped being violent at school. You know, it's actually pretty straightforward. If you change the environment to boys needing men around them, and women and girls needing women around them, you know, everybody balances out really well if they have a stable parental relationship in the family unit. If you have bad relationships with your father for girls, you wind up having bad relationships with men. If you don't have your father in the home for all or most of your life as a boy, you're like 7 times more likely than anyone else to get a criminal conviction. You know, the statistics are right there. And the family... in and of itself, is under attack, you know. And particularly the institution of marriage. When was the last time you ever saw on TV or movies or anything a positive mention about marriage? And how many times have you heard them making jokes about it and degrading it?
It's always like War of the Roses or, you know, or, yeah, they're at each other's throat or, you know. Right. Yeah. But, you know, there's also this flip side, too. There's this, like, there's this, my vocabulary is just leaving me today. I'm just going to say thing. I can't think, lack of a better word.
For an English teacher, that's not a good sign, girl.
I know. Come on, dude. Give me, I think I'm on overload. Yeah. Custom tradition in society too, that's saying that you actually have to be married by a certain age or, you know, to be happy. Have you heard of this book called The Rules, Vinny?
No, I'm not a fan of rules.
No, but there's a book that came out a few years ago called The Rules, and it's basically a book written by women.
Doesn't sound like a book that I'd read, eh?
No, but I'm just saying, but we, you know, we have these, you know, as far as marriage on the subject of marriage, you know, all these little, like, things like that, like books, like telling you how to manipulate people into being with you in order to be happy. So it's kind of like this, it's like a shtick, a thing. I don't know. Help me out, April. What do you call it? Like,
well, I think what we're describing is that it's coming on from both sides of it. You know, if like you're saying, there's we're sort of demonizing the institution of marriage, making it seem like it's such a negative thing, and then on the other side of it, there's these people who actually prey upon those who are single and say that they are wrong or they haven't. Or that they need to get married by a certain age, or you have to do certain things in order to land your man. Like this book, The Rules, she's talking about teaches women how to manipulate men into marrying them. And so, but the message to women is that you then have to be married, and you have to be married by a certain age, because otherwise you're not, you know, a real woman or something like that, or you're undesirable. But if you can, go ahead.
No, no, go on, go on.
I was interviewing a PhD professor, and he says women control men entirely. And I go, how? And I go like, what do you mean? He says women can make a man attracted to her, and I go, how? She controls sex. It's just that simple.
Right.
Hmm. Well, so I didn't mean to cut. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, no. I love you, Ape. You're awesome. That's why you're my co-host. I'm having like a brain fart today. But that's why, you know, you're my co-host. So
all right.
Thank you. You explained exactly what I was trying to say.
Yeah, perfectly. But I think that what you're getting at, Vinny, is I wrote this essay not that long ago, or maybe it has been a while. I just haven't done a lot of writing lately. So it's the last thing I wrote back in October about when I was in college, I had an experience with sort of what would be described as the feminist movement. Because this is part of my awakening, too, by the way. When I was growing up, I grew up in a very liberal city, San Francisco. San Francisco, here in the United States, is a city that's known for, you know, kind of being leftist and sort of on that side of it. And so what I was surrounded with was a lot of these lefties. And I went to college kind of thinking that, you know, feminism, these women who were sort of for women's rights and everything, were very enlightened. And what I discovered when I was in college, I was taking this course on women in American history. And first of all, what I learned during the course was that there wasn't as much oppression as I had thought. There was actually women in power from a very early time. And then the other thing that was even more enlightening was not just what I learned in the course, but actually the response of the women in my class. See, Bill Clinton was president at the time, and Bill Clinton is a rapist. You know, he rapes and molests women. And so what these women were doing was defending him by saying that, you know, he raped this woman in Oxford when he was in college. She was 17. He was 19 or 20 years old. And they went on a date. She went back to his dorm room and he raped her. And what they were saying was that this woman kind of had it coming. You know, and these are supposed to be feminist, Vinny. Like, they're supposed to be kind of defending the woman, right? And they're saying that she had it coming because she shouldn't have been so naive to go back to his room. She should have known better and all of these things. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. They're so caught up in their false right-left paradigm. They're so caught up in wanting to be on the winning team that they were willing to defend a rapist, even though they're supposed to be feminist. So this level of hypocrisy just led me to see it for what it really was, which was just BS. I said, this whole thing is a lie. There's no way that there's, and once you start going down that rabbit hole, you go, oh, actually, I mean, there's a lot too that this was a conspiracy, but and it was set up in order to break up the family, in order to get the people this false sense of inequity, which, because if you think about it, as you're saying, women, you know, control men because they have sex, but in a situation of a crisis, like let's say you're on the Titanic and it's going down, who gets the lifeboat, right? The women. Women and children first, no matter what. No matter if a man gets, you know, if he's got a better chance of survival, she gets to go in the lifeboat first. So how, and then yet, but see, we're given...
The juxtaposition, I think there's a great comedian called Bill Bird. He came up with a sketch on this, and he goes, what feminists have done is they've gone through everything that men and women do and all the things that men do for women, and then just picked all the things that they like and discarded all the rest, you know? Yeah, I want equal pay, equal wages, and equal time off of work and all of that kind of thing, but paying for the movies? Nah, I think the men can keep that one.
Totally. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, but I mean, my point is that they're not giving up that. They're not giving up the life, I can guarantee you. But then see how that's a contradiction, though, because we're supposed to believe that we're the oppressed, but yet we get the lifeboat every time. You know, that doesn't really make sense, because why wouldn't a man get the lifeboat if he had a better chance of survival? Like, let's say he's, you know, he can hunt and he can fish and he can do all these things. So they find themselves somewhere stranded. He's going to be able to protect everybody better. But he doesn't get the lifeboat. You know, so that was sort of a, once I kind of was, I thought, this is hypocritical. And then, yes, you know, it is breaking up the family. And I think we were talking about not having the father in the home, you know, some of the research that I found led to that, you know, the increase of boys being diagnosed with ADHD is much higher amongst boys who don't have fathers, you know. And there's all kinds of evidence that, you know, they're more likely to be sick, they're more likely to have violence, they're more likely to have, you know, all these other kind of neurological problems. So, yeah, I mean, but on the other side of it, you don't want, you know, people being made to feel guilty, like they have to get married or they have to do all that. So it's sort of, but that's how they divide us. N'est-ce pas? You too? You agree?
Most certainly. One would expect that if you're going to try and run a system that actually runs the people in the system into the ground, then naturally you're going to make them feel like dirt in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after all, a slave who doesn't want to be free because they don't think they're a slave is a hell of a lot easier to control than a slave who knows he's a slave and is really pissed off about it. And I think mm-hmm. what's happening now is... All the slaves are starting mm-hmm. to get really pissed off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope so, right?
I mean, doesn't it actually fill you with a sense of joy that you are a revolting slave?
It does. But sometimes, honestly, I mean, that was a really convincing answer, right? Sorry. It does. Well, for myself, because I feel more enlightened, I feel I have a better understanding about why certain things happen, and that makes me feel empowered. But at the same time, I just wish sometimes I still get this, like, you know, I feel like we're on a time crunch. Come on, you guys. Like, I see our country trying to plot, you know, World War III, and I'm like, come on, you guys, get on it. You know, I don't know. I want them to be more of us. I want us, more people, to become conscious. That's my plight right now.
Now, I think of it as individuals kind of make the difference in any given situation, and the masses really are sheep to a large degree, and they will follow any shepherd that's put in front of them, regardless of whether that shepherd leads you into a slaughterhouse or to greener pastures. I say we start shepherding, you know, actually really caring about other people and also become better shepherds.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know, it's true.
I mean, if you've got the ability to lead and see things like that, I mean, it's incumbent on you. It's actually kind of like a real mark of responsibility that we have as people who know what is going on to stand up and actually be society's leading people. However, this is ironic because none of us want to appeal to authority.
Mm.
Yeah.
But that's where we do need each other, like you say, yeah. Because it's like, as an individual, you know, what are you going to do? Like, when, you know, you got arrested, how are you going to fight that by yourself? I mean, that's a pickle that you can't really, you don't have a choice, because the people with the guns are going to make you go to jail, whether you want to or not. But if we stand up as a group and we say, you know what, we're going to grow this stuff, and sorry, it's a weed and it's natural and screw you, you know, but once you get yeah. into a large enough group, how are they going to stop you, you know? So it's like, we kind of do need I wouldn't say the collective, but we need a community in a way. And so it's, how are you going to prevent people from becoming communities is through division and disempowerment again, you know? I mean, yeah. Back to the feminist thing. The other thing that I recognized was that the feminist movement is based on disempowering women. It actually is disempowering you, because it's telling you that you're a victim. Which isn't really even true. When you look at the history of it, it's not even true. You know, there's always been disenfranchised groups. There's always people that are, you know, there's inequity throughout history of times where, you know, women have been suppressed in some ways, and then in other ways they haven't, and so on and so forth. But, I mean, if you look at it as like, oh, well, you know, they wouldn't allow women to vote. Well, oh, so they got the vote, so now they get to appeal to a false sense of authority. So basically they just got brought down to where the men were anyway. So I don't know. It's just it's interesting, but that's how that works. These systems are actually to then make you feel like you're a victim, and therefore then you're going to appeal to authority to protect you. And ask for equal wages, ask for the right to vote, ask for these things when you really don't even need their permission.
Yeah.
I think
same thing with affirmative action. You know, you can say that.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I strike a soft spot with feminists sometimes. I don't know what it is about me, but they really hate me because I'm not a feminized man. Maybe I don't know, but they I get into these arguments, And eventually it gets to the point of the argument where I've established that they really don't know what they're talking about. They're just being aggressive and rude and all of these terrible things.
And they call you sexist, right? And you're just being sexist.
Yeah. all of that jazz. You know, they're not actually arguing, okay? They're just repeating BS that they've heard before. It's really sad. And what's sadder is that every single time I ask them, let me guess, you're single? They say yes, because they...
You're like, I wonder why.
You can't maintain a relationship with a man if you don't respect him. Relationships are a two-way street, as is respect, okay? You can't bring women up in respect by saying that men are the cause of all problems and we should be damned and have to do everything. You know, it's all more to the point. Actually, you know what feminism's done? It's actually treated women worse than it's treated men. Because now women have to do everything. You have to have a full-time job and be a mother and pay attention to your man and maintain that perfect relationship. No wonder divorce rates are so freaking high. Women have all this pressure on them now. Thank you, feminism, for equalizing the pressure in the relationship by making sure that there isn't one because it's too freaking stressful.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Exactly. Yeah, that's my point. Exactly. Is that they went from being not really being disempowered, but that was a whole fallacy. That was, you know, it wasn't actually true. But like you're saying, there was more, you know, equalness. And a woman's not going to have, like you say, she's not going to have a boyfriend if she thinks men are evil and she thinks that men are, you know, the cause of all of her problems. Then yeah, she's not going to find a man. She's not going to find a boyfriend. It's a two-way street, and we have to recognize that we both have things to offer one another, that we actually need each other. Yeah, we need each other. Balance,
what man when he goes out filling out an online dating form, what are you looking for in a woman? Well, I want a woman that hates me, that's argumentative, that's really bitter, that doesn't want to bear my children and wants to work all the time and boss me around and treat me like a slave. There's a huge amount of results. They're awesome. I can take my pick of the litter.
Yeah.
Because they're all single.
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you know, and then too, if like you don't see the value in men too, because then you'll have all those other women who say, "I can do it all. I can do it all myself." Well, first of all, why would you want to? Because it's a lot of work. And secondly, you know, but then how's a man gonna feel? You know, if he feels emasculated, that he's unnecessary, that a woman can just raise her children and have, you know, do all these things on her own. But you know, it's not true. You know, it's not true at all, and we totally need each other. And that's what we're here for. If it's not to have relationships and to, you know, find love and to find companionship, then what's the point? You know, what are we fighting for?
It's almost like feminism is about a trade. It's trading the masculinity out of men and putting it into women, and trading the femininity out of women and putting it into men, and everything just gets totally jumbled up because people don't know who they are anymore, because what they're being told to think and what their body is telling them are two totally different things.
Oh, wow, yeah. Yeah.
Which is a fallacy in itself, because we all have feminine and masculine.
Masculine.
Traits, you know, obviously as a woman you're gonna have more feminine traits than a masculine trait, but you have some, you know. I mean, I have a dirty sense of humor, which I could attribute to being kind of a masculine thing. You know, I love the movie The 40-Year-Old Virgin. That's kind of my style of sense of humor. And but guys will say, those are guys movies, you like that? And I go, yeah, I do. I don't know, I can't help it, but I'm mostly pretty feminine other than that. So, but I think guys, you know, if a guy likes to watch the show Sex and the City, that doesn't necessarily mean he's, you know, feminine. But you know, it's just to say that we all have bits and pieces of each other, but that just goes to show how we go together. You know, it's like it's a synergy. We belong to each other. And this sort of, I can do it on my own. I don't need this person, or it's, or, you know, men are, when they're evil because they want sex. No, what are you talking about? You know, you should feel honored
that they want to have sex with you.
Why is that an insult? I'm like, I don't get it.
Oh, I feel so dirty. He wants to give me an amazing screaming orgasm. That's just disgusting.
No, that's a that's an honor. That means that he finds you attractive. What's wrong with that? You know, I don't. I mean, of course, a guy can be sleazy about it, you know. But
I saw this. I saw this picture of Barack Obama leaning in to whisper something into the ear of Michelle Obama just after he won the presidency. It's like, girl, I'm gonna tear that all up.
It was like the caption. They put like a little, what do you call it? Like a box?
Like a little speech bubble.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you don't know. He could have said something like that. Who knows, man?
Yeah.
It's really funny, too, but like the imbalance between men and women and how, like, I notice a lot of men are, or women are taught that it's okay to hit men. I mean, men shouldn't hit women. You know, and women shouldn't hit men. But as a teacher, I see that too. Like, you're teaching the children in school that, well, I don't teach that, but I've seen other students get taught that, oh, okay, women, boys can hit girls, but you know,
I think there's a power disparity.
And
in fact, that was another thing that Bill Burr, the comedian, was talking about feminism, is that the only reason why women can destroy men's lives is because you can't hit them. No, seriously. Think about this.
Yeah, it's true.
If a man came into my room, poured like Coca-Cola acid on my equipment or something like that, and like threw my clothes out onto the lawn and burned them, I would smack the hell out of that guy. But if my but your girlfriend does it, and then she just walks out like, what? You can't do nothing.
Yeah, but you know what? It's true. Like, I had this, we're not friends anymore, but I had this friend, and she was telling me that, you know, how her ex-husband used to, like, hold her down and put his hand over her mouth. And I was like, well, why would he do that? And she was like, oh, yeah, you know, one day he laughed at me, so I beat him with a spatula. And then he restrained me. And I'm just like, well, bitch, you need, oops, I'm sorry, Vinny. You needed to be restrained because you're a rabid dog, you know. And then that's one of the reasons why, or the reason I ended my friendship with her, because she couldn't control her temper. She was very erratic, but yet she said she had all this trouble with men, and you know, with the relationship she was in with men. But it was because of her, and she, you know, she thought it was okay to go crazy on them physically and verbally. But yet, if they did something to protect themselves, then, you know, they were the wrong. They were, you know, in the wrong. So.
Right.
I've taken that upon myself recently as well, because I can get verbally abusive. I haven't actually physically laid a hand on anybody since I was like 15 in high school or something. But yeah, I can get really, really angry and worked up and verbally abuse my wife, and then I hold myself back and I go, oh my God, what am I doing? It's just freaking terrible. And then I actually talk to her about it and really kind of apologize and. I'm slowly learning, and it's gradually getting better and better. But the fact that it's still there, you know, like you've got the streak in you, because it was like, it reminded me of when I was a kid, and I'd throw tantrums and things like that, and I'd go like completely out of control, you know. It's like there's still that part of me that's there that I'm slowly working on trying to get rid of it. Because at my core, when I was born, I was born into a really wealthy household, and I was quite literally, looking back on my behavior throughout those years, a spoiled brat, and in many ways still am. And I'm kind of wrestling with myself, trying to come to terms with it and to solve it before I have kids, you know, so when I pass that kind of spoiled brat behavior onto them.
What are your thoughts on spanking?
I reckon it's fine, you know? I mean, but then again, I wouldn't really use spanking and what have you. I mean, like, if the child's, again, back to common law and natural law, if a child's actually damaging somebody else or somebody's property or something like that, I think it's actually perfectly okay to actually just, you'll only have to do this once or twice in the child's life, and then they'll suddenly get the idea and it'll replicate, is if they cause pain to somebody else, you cause pain to them really, really, really quickly in the exact same way that they just did it to somebody else. So that way they know exactly what they just did and they feel it. I remember when I was in high school, I think I was maybe 11 or 12 or something like that, we learned in high school that women's breasts are very, very sensitive. And I went home and I punched my mother in the breast, you know, and I feel really terrible about it now. I was angry with her and stuff like that, and I just learned this, and I didn't. And then I walked out of the house, and my mother told her boyfriend Barry about it, and he came right over, and he punched me directly in the solar plexus and totally winded me, and like I was down on the ground for like about five minutes or something like that, in frickin' pain, not able to breathe. And he says, "That's what you just did to your mother. Never hit a woman again." Okay. You know, so sometimes the bad things that you do can be the very source, especially if they're reflected back at you quite directly, and your brain makes that connection, right? Like if you had a child who just suddenly scratched you or something like that, you grab their arm and you squeeze, and they go, ow, and then they scratch you again, you grab your arm, you grab their arm and you squeeze just a little hard, and they go, ow, and they scratch your arm again, you squeeze just a little bit harder, ow. And then they stop scratching you, and they never scratch you again. All right. See, this is the thing about physical discipline that people don't understand. It should never involve emotion. All right. If you are physically disciplining your child, you have to be 100% calm, on the ball, responsible adult. You have to care and love as you're doing it. And not convey that this is out of anger or rage, that it is simply trying to inflict a physical lesson upon you and relay it directly to something. If you're just like going out of control or something like that, it's simple. You know, go to your room, time out 5 minutes or something like that until you calm down, and then you come back out. And if you go back in, you check them after 5 minutes. If they haven't calmed down, you go, "Are you ready to calm down and come out?" And they go, "No, no, no." And you go, "Okay." And you close the door and you quickly walk out. There's no arguments. There's no, "Oh, please," or anything like that. It's simply cut off the contact, cut off the appreciation at periods of time until they get the lesson that that behavior is not appreciated, and they replicate the behavior that you do want. Like being a good kid. Having fun and games, not hitting other children, not spitting, not biting, not breaking things deliberately, you know, not being destructive. And that way you manufacture a very positive, caring kid who's going to turn into a really great adult, who's going to find a loving partner and raise really good kids of their own. And that's how you replicate a good lesson through it. And if you come from a violent, abusive kind of family background as I have, the onus is on the child, after it's happened, to get over that stuff and to not make the same mistakes your parents did on you. Otherwise, it's going to repeat down your family line, and that's not good for your bloodline.
Yeah.
Well.
Right, and it's like what you're saying, I think, is something that we've talked about before, that it's about intention. So when you intend to hurt somebody, you're going to, if you're intending to hurt your child because you are a damaged person and you have not addressed your own childhood abuse, which is usually what that is when parents hit their kids, is because they got hit and they don't know the difference between, you know, they can't control their anger. So they lash out on their own child when their child upsets them. But if you intend it to be a lesson and it's not, and you kind of take that away from it and take it out of it. So I think it's about what you're saying as intention. And it's very astute, Vinny, to acknowledge, like, well, you know, I yell at my wife, and to reflect on that and say, you know, why do I do this? Oh, it's because I am, you know, I'm still acting out in that way that I did when I was a kid, that tantruming. Because I think that we learn when we're children ways that we are capable of getting attention. And if you don't get positive attention, you'll seek negative attention. And so in a lot of ways, when we act out it's because we're really looking for attention, or, you know, we just don't have the self-control, you know, because we never were taught to have the self-control, or that, you know, was the only way that we got attention. We get something out of it, you know.
Yeah, and also, if you're hyped up on sugar or very unhealthy, or if you're a parent, very sleep deprived, it is doubly hard to control your temper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.